Now, you might chuckle at a man who loves making jam with homegrown fruit and whose hobby is the history and design of manhole covers. But at the start of the UK election campaign, Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party were about 25 points behind Theresa May and the Conservatives. Now they're as few as 4 points behind. And Corbyn's policies, renationalising the railways and the water supply and raising taxes on the rich, have between 50 and 70% support of the British people. So few people now are talking about the Tories having a 100-seat majority after Thursday's election. How did this happen? Peter Hitchens is a columnist with The Mail on Sunday, and Anne McElvoy is a senior editor with The Economist. Anne and Peter, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Pleasure to be with you.
What has been the most surprising element of this campaign for you both? Peter?
Well, that it's happening at all. Nobody really thought there was any need for an election. There was this wonderful moment when it was called, when a woman in Bristol called Brenda, who's now become a national heroine, Brenda from Bristol, said, "What? No, not again. I can't stand it." Which summed up the feelings of most people, including me, that we seem to have had quite enough elections. We're having nearly as many as you now. And it is nonsensical that we should be having so many. There is supposed to be an interval of 5 years between elections, and they seem to come along more regularly than breakfast now.
I think you're having more elections than us, but not as many leadership changes.
We can do those too. Don't worry. That's all possible.
And for you, the most surprising element of this election campaign so far?
Well, I wasn't so surprised that Theresa May sought a new mandate. Perhaps I didn't think so soon, but I thought this whole idea of five-term fixed parliaments was not really congruent with these very turbulent times that we've had after Brexit, etc. So I wasn't so surprised by that. But I think I have been surprised, and a lot of the commentariat has been surprised, that Theresa May has fought such a dismal campaign, even just professionally, let alone what one might think of the ideas. And that the Corbyn challenge, a lot of people thought that Jeremy Corbyn, coming from the hard left of Labour, when he was put under public scrutiny in an election campaign, would struggle noticeably from the off, and actually hasn't really. I mean, you know, he's still very far short, I think, of being the next Prime Minister, but you would have to say, in fairness, that he has had a good campaign.
You wrote just this weekend, Peter, about the terrorist attack in Manchester. The conventional wisdom was that the Islamist attack would actually boost the Tories. So what's happened there? What has been the effect of it?
I don't know. The difficulty at the moment, and ever since the opinion polls in this country started getting everything wrong, is to know what's really going on. I don't know whether it's boosted them or not. All kinds of other things are preoccupying people. Can I just say something about what Anne said? I'm not in the least bit surprised at the Theresa May's dismal and lackluster campaign. It seemed to me that anybody who'd paid any attention to her previous political career knew that she was a wooden performer and a person not exactly full of ideas or zeal, who doesn't actually work very well in public debate, especially when challenged. And Jeremy Corbyn had a huge advantage in that he had spent, I think it's now 2 years, being subjected to a perpetual hosing down of slime by the Conservative propaganda machine. He couldn't conceivably be as bad as they said he was. So he started out with an advantage that he was bound to be better than people thought he was, which he's played quite successfully. But that doesn't decide the election by any manner of means. All kinds of other things are deciding that.
And is Peter being too tough on your PM there?
I think he's being a bit tough in the way that both left and right at the moment, it's sort of fashionable to decide that Theresa May is an idiot. I think she's had a poor campaign, I said that, but I do think that it is underestimating her. You know, strangely enough, you know, women tend to end up underestimated. I think she has been a very tough performer. I think she is wooden, that's true. Her communication style is not good. There's not going to be a Saturday Night Live stand-up with Theresa May anytime soon. But she has been, I think, more consistent than a lot of people in the old Conservative cabinet, in the old George Osborne, David Cameron cabinet. She's a securocrat. She's a small C Conservative. She came through what was the old grammar school system, which Peter's a great adherent of, rather than the private school system, which produced a lot of what you used to call the old sort of Tory posh boys. I think she has fought her way to the top. In some way, she reminds me, and I don't know whether your audience will warm to this or not, she reminds me a bit of Julia Gillard. You know, she just keeps going. She pumps it out. Not everybody warms to the style, but she did break through that glass ceiling. thing. So perhaps I have a bit more time for her than Peter. By the way, I still think she'll be the next Prime Minister, and I don't think her margin will be catastrophically small.
Mm. Well,
is she consistent, though? I mean, for instance, take the question of her going to a grammar school. Now, I found this out by looking at her background, but she didn't actually put it in reference books, which doesn't suggest to me that she was terribly proud of it or passionate about it. Now she's made it into a badge.
Well, I think if you take apart the record of a lot of politicians, what they put in their resumes, what they choose to gloss over for various reasons of fashion at any time, I think, you know, strangely enough, Peter, you'll find them a bit wanting.
Yeah, and you did say you didn't think Theresa May would be appearing in a Saturday Night Live skit at any time. Why, though, did she dodge a great primetime television opportunity by refusing to take part in the debate this week? She sent a surrogate, a capable surrogate in Amber Rudd, but every other political leader was there.
Well, yes, but she is not obliged to, remember. In the British system, you choose if you want to go and debate or not. I mean, journalists would love it if we could put what we call a three-line whip on them and make them turn up. Generally speaking, leaders don't take the risk unless they feel there's something in it for them. And Linton Crosby, Australian, Linton Crosby, who runs the show in terms of strategy, or at least when the Tory party's not falling over its own feet, he does. He is very much against risk and unnecessary risk. That was also a position taken by David Cameron and others before him, that you don't put yourself up. You're the Prime Minister. You carry responsibility for everything. Everyone else can have a pot shot at you. All you can say back is, well, you don't look very convincing in opposition. So it's not exactly in your interest to do so. The more surprising thing was that Jeremy Corbyn came out. He's only decided on the day to do it because he is now in a stronger position than many expected. So he might as well keep going from his point of view. Why not show yourself to the public and try and lose this reputation as some bonkers far left winger? But if you listen to him, he's talking about jam and pavements and how, you know, how he has grown grass where there used to be concrete in his garden. You would think you were basically getting your local garden committee elected rather than someone who still has profoundly very far left views. So from his point of view, yes, why not? Theresa May probably just thinks, in the end, they're going to come back to me on the safety first grounds.
Peter, you once observed that for 20 years, the entire British political culture, and we're talking here about, you know, quote unquote, New Labour, but also the Tories, was Blairite, meaning they were liberal, you know, free markets, dare I say, a bit of free love. Now, given the scepticism that Theresa May shows towards the free markets and the outright hostility that Jeremy Corbyn expresses for neoliberalism, can we now say that Blairism is dead in UK politics?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the scepticism about free markets is all very well, but until you actually do something which moves away from that policy and moves away from the Blairite policies, which the Conservative Party embraced around about the time David Cameron took over its leadership, then we've still got a Blairite consensus at the top of our politics, which arrogates to itself the title of the centre and won't listen to any other arguments. In her performance, she remains pretty much the same as the Blairite and Cameron government before. We had a continuous Blairite government in this country since 1997 at the latest, and you could say that at least the second part of John Major's government was pretty Blairite as well. So the two major parties have more or less merged politically, and that remains the case. What's interesting is that the Labour Party now is outside that, and the Blairites who had dominated the Labour Party are now lost and homeless and don't know who to follow or where to go or who to vote for.
Okay, Anne.
A word on that, actually.
Yes, well, I was going to ask, Anne, is this the sort of end of the Economist worldview in British politics, if both sides are sort of disavowing total free markets and open borders?
Well, I think The Economist has stood for a sort of classical liberalism, but also, you know, a modern socialism. We would disagree with Peter on that, I would say, largely. I like the idea of free love, and I was just trying to wonder where that was going to fit in the manifesto. And my mind turned again to the thought of Theresa May going out there and preaching that we all let it all hang out. But I think in terms of your more serious point, no, I don't believe the centre is dead. And I think that the centre is hollowed out. Peter is completely right. You know, the Blairites and those even of moderate social democratic views who were perhaps a bit to the left of Blair are out of the main picture in Labour. I don't think that's sustainable. This is a big block of public opinion that exists in democracies. It exists powerfully in Australia and other democracies. I think it is not sustainable for it to remain like this, hollowed out in the middle forever, or indeed for very long. But at this election, it is true that voters have been given a slightly odd choice. I suppose I don't agree with Peter that this is a continuation of Blairite politics. If you look where Labour is, if you look at Theresa May, it's a much more small-C conservative mindset. And indeed, what has happened after Brexit, it kind of is different. And it is a more inward-looking politics. It's also what a lot of people wanted, and elites have difficulty in accepting that.
It's Saturday Extra. Andrew West in for Geraldine. We're discussing the UK elections. My guests, Peter Hitchens, columnist at The Mail on Sunday, and Anne McElvoy, senior editor at The Economist. Peter, what explains, if you look individually at polling, what explains the individual popularity of Jeremy Corbyn's policies, even though one poll shows that 50% of people think he'd be a disaster as Prime Minister?
Well, if you take away his past sympathy for Irish republicanism, which is inexplicable and indefensible, a lot of the policies which Mr. Corbyn's party has embraced are policies which people find very acceptable. He was right, for instance, about all the stupid wars that we entered over the past 10 years. Absolutely right when almost everybody else was wrong. Most people who travel by train would entirely agree that the railways need to be renationalised. I travel by train twice a day, and I've been in favour of renationalisation for years. And most other people who I travel with, and most of the staff of the railways that one talks to, are these are sensible policies which only dogma prevents from being implemented. For the rest of it, there is a serious argument for saying that when borrowing is so cheap, it might be sensible for governments to borrow more for major projects. And also, there is a huge amount of discontent among the young about the fact that they cannot find stable employment with decent pay, and they can't find anywhere to live. And he at least appears to offer to quite a lot of people like that some sense that somebody is listening to them. Whether he has any solution to it is another matter, but he does. So once you've taken away the Irish problem and the messing around with Sinn Féin, which he did, which was, as far as I can say, is an insuperable barrier, then you've got a collection of standard, old-fashioned left-wing policies which many people find appealing.
And has Jeremy Corbyn and Labour dragged Theresa May to the left in that sense? Because every time I hear Theresa May speaking, it's all about the government not getting out of the way, but getting in, helping people. It's putting workers on boards. This is very un-Thatcherite.
Yeah, Theresa May was never a Thatcherite, however. If you remember, she came into Parliament rather later. She's sort of an age where she looks a bit like she could be a Thatcherite, but I think people sort of get that wrong about her. There is a response, not just to Jeremy Corbyn, but generally I would say that the centre has moved leftwards after the financial crash. The centre-left is probably more to the left than it was in terms of state intervention. I think, you know, going through Peter's list there, the big problem with all of that, for a start, I don't want to renationalise the railways, you know, the idea that a modern country now is really going to find the answer into renationalisation and the these ideas that were big in the immediate post-war years seems to me wrong. And most countries have a mixed public-private arrangement, whether it's in railways, whether it's in healthcare, whatever. So I think that is simply wrong. But where Peter has the point is that people haven't had to think about it for a long time. They had a cold blast or a hot blast, depending which side you were on, of Thatcherism, deregulation, freeing up a lot of British economic activity. Then they had a consolidation period, broadly speaking, of Tony Blair saying, I'm going to take the edge off that and make it sound a bit nicer and, you know, be a bit more socially liberal. And I think Theresa May really comes, if you like, from that middle point. She doesn't, for instance, really believe in letting markets rip to the extent that she thinks people should be able to be as rich as they like and pay very little back into the system. I think she has a very different view. As you always think, if you ask a small-C conservative person in a golf club outside London what they think, you get an answer that's very like Theresa May.
I should say, though, Anne, on the railways, the governments do run the railways. It's just that they're not British governments. It's the French government and the German government.
That is quite true.
Listen,
I'm kind of feeling let's move on from the railways.
The Dutch government,
yes,
and the
now,
German government.
Peter, now, Rod Little wrote in The Spectator that if it were not for Corbyn's lax policy on immigration and open borders, Corbyn could win this thing. So is immigration going to be a decisive issue?
Well, it might be. We're not quite sure how, given that the Conservative Party's record on it is so feeble itself and can't really campaign on being a tough on immigration party because it's demonstrably not been. I don't know whether that can really be an issue in this election between the two big parties. Neither of them can claim to have been in favour in practice of serious control of immigration. People might want to believe it, but it simply isn't the case.
Now, Anne, what is likely to happen with the smaller parties? First of all, the Scottish National Party. It was once observed that they campaign in left-wing poetry, but they govern in sort of right-wing prose. They're really just as budget-cutting as any other government. Is that sort of separatist bubble up in Scotland likely to burst at this election?
No, I think the SNP will still do very well at the election because their natural competitors are the Labour Party, which is even more hollowed out, believe it or not, in Scotland than it is in England. It is not a particularly fiscally responsible party. I think, you know, whoever made that jibe at them obviously was sort of the view that the magic money tree grows in Edinburgh.
The New Statesman, I think, made that
well,
jibe.
Well, there you are. It depends who's writing it. It's a, you know, it's a left-leaning magazine. And in terms of the SNP in government, I think one of the bigger problems is it doesn't address some of the really, you know, the underlying problems Scotland has, education levels, or even access of poorer Scots to higher levels of education is not looking very good. It's not a reformist public services party. What it is very good at is capturing the disaffection Scots feel with the English, and Brexit has obviously magnified that. The difficulty is, of course, is it running basically to say, give us a big result and then we'll give you another referendum, and this time we'll get it right and we'll get out of the UK? Or, as I suspect, is Nicola Sturgeon running on a neverendum in which she says, keep me in power, I like being in power. She's good at it as well, you know, she puts a very good face on it. Labour is dead in the water. The Tories will do quite well at this election in Scotland, which, you know, this would have been seen as a miracle a few years ago, has a very good, punchy young leader in Ruth Davison.
You say,
but they won't do as well as the SNP.
They'll do quite well, but that's only in comparison with the appallingly feeble performances they put up for the past 20 years or so. They won't do well in terms
doing
of
quite well
threatening
means,
the
SNP.
Well, it doesn't. It means that they will move from being appalling to being slightly less appalling and
well,
in terms
will.
Of performance. And also,
well,
the other thing about Ruth Davison, their much-hyped leader, is that I can't see in what way at all she is a Conservative. So it is completely baffling to me that anybody of that type could describe herself as a Conservative.
Okay,
she's a standard issue modern Liberal.
Okay, Peter, speaking of Liberals, what then of the only true return to Europe party, and that is the Liberal Democrats?
I thought they would do quite well at the beginning of this. I have friends of mine who were Tories but who were in favour of staying in the European Union were talking about voting for the Liberal Democrats because of that issue. But I think the performance of their leader and the particularly the decision to back the decriminalisation of cannabis as a manifesto commitment, I think has made people realise that they are an irresponsible party and a trivial party. And I think they will do quite possibly fairly well in one or two individual constituencies where they were strongly placed. But any chance of a national surge towards them, I think, is probably gone.
OK, I won't ask both of you for predictions, but I will ask you both, what will most surprise you a week from now, Anne?
Well, I suppose it would seem surprising, it would seem extremely surprising if Jeremy Corbyn were the Prime Minister, because I think that for all we've said about how the centre is changing and people's changing views, I think in the end, you know, they like the sense of a continuity and reliability. That's also quite British in outlook. I suppose what would now be surprising is if Theresa May gets, we were sometimes talking about her getting well over 100 seat majority, and I don't think she believed that hype, but it was certainly, looking at the polls, it was on the cards at the beginning of the campaign. So I suppose the surprise would be if Theresa May did even better than she deserves to do after a pretty subpar campaign.
Peter?
Whatever the result, I'll be surprised if there isn't serious talk in the Conservative Party about replacing Theresa May fairly soon.
Oh, well, that is the Australian disease. Look, it's been absolutely terrific to have you both. A very lively debate. Peter Hitchens, columnist with The Mail on Sunday, and Anne McElvoy, senior editor at The Economist. I thank you both for being with us on Saturday Extra.
Great
Thanks
pleasure.
For having us.